The Matalo Method Podcast is a production by Logan Allen and me, Barry Harris. Earlier this week, we released part one of our album discussion episode on the 1978 Barry Manilow studio album, Even Now. If you haven't watched or listened to it yet, you can go back and check it out right now. That discussion ran long, so here is part two of our conversation right now.
And now we flip it over to side two with a huge, huge track, the title track, Even Now. Once again, written by Barry Manilow and Marty Panzer, who also wrote the lyric for Leaving in the Morning. Now, Barry, give me your thoughts on this track, because this is a big one.
This is a big one. And one thing I'll point out about the song Even Now is that currently, if you see Manilow in concert, many times before he performs this song, he speaks to the crowd, and many times, he's been saying this, I feel like, a lot lately, how he's so proud of this song, he's so proud to be associated with it, and Marty Panzer wrote such a beautiful lyric, and he goes on and proceeds to play it. So it's certainly very well established that Manilow himself really, really loves this song, and so does all of his fans. I think that for a song to have the right words to express heartbreak, this song does that so well. Just taking the lyrics alone by Marty Panzer, it is such a beautiful lyric. It's devastating how beautiful, achingly beautiful it is. And of course, like we've been saying throughout this program, all of the arrangements and choices that Manilow makes with the melodies and the chords and the arrangements are all in service of this beautiful lyric. So the lyric is most certainly the focal point of this song, and everything else is built around that. And it is really a tour de force. I mean, again, there's on this album alone, there are so many singular examples of Barry Manilow's greatness, and who would have thought that he would manage to do it many times over on this single album?
I know. It's crazy to think about. I wanted to bring this up here. We're going to bring the boxed set booklet back up here with a quote from Marty Panzer talking about the writing of this song. He talks here about how when he wrote this song, this is a quote from him, he said, quote, "I wanted to write a song that said, I miss you because you're worth missing."
Mm.
That is very deep, because you get a lot of songs that, you know, are about heartbreak. Oh, I miss you. Please come back. I still love you. But this is a song that is coming from someone who is heartbroken, but it's a love song. It's not specifically about, you know, just feeling so depressed. It's just about, like you said, missing someone because they are so wonderful that he needs to miss them. That is what I think is really compelling about this song, because there aren't many other songs in the world that I can think of that really have that specific context behind it. I miss you because you're worth missing. That really struck a chord with me, I think. That is a very interesting inspiration for a song. And I wanted to mention, you talked about how he does it in concert nowadays. Listening to this album, other than the fact that the album does it here in this key, but nowadays he does it in this key. Other than that, the live arrangement nowadays has stayed so true to the record. There haven't been many changes that have happened. Obviously, there has to be an ending, but there haven't been that many changes to the arrangement of this song. And one thing I need to give Manilow props for is his pronunciation has improved over the years. In the last chorus of the song, when he does the "and God, I wish you knew," that lyric, it's like on the record, all of those words bled together. God, I wish you knew. But nowadays, he fully enunciates, God, I wish you knew. So thank you for improving your pronunciation on that. That is what I had to say.
Yeah, it's actually great that you picked up on that. And I think that Even Now as an album is the last time that you hear Manilow's unvarnished accent. I think after this album, it really phased out after this, and you didn't hear the thick Brooklyn accent. But I did want to pick up on something you just mentioned, Logan. You said that you've never really heard many deviations of the arrangement. Yes, that is true. However, there was one time where he did a very notable deviation from the arrangement, and that was when he was on his tour in 2001 through 2002. I was there, and I was seeing it. I saw that tour three times because it went around a second time, and we got to then see two more nights of it. But back when we saw it in the spring of 2002, he sang Even Now, and when he was singing, he did something notably different. He does the intro exactly like he does, and then he does I Need You. And
because it was coming out of Mandy. It was coming out of Mandy.
Right, exactly. But I didn't expect it, and that kind of like almost knocked me out of my chair. I'm like, wait, what just happened? It was like amazing, and it was so impassioned. It was a moment where Manilow found a new place to kind of put something interesting into the arrangement. So that was a shocker when that happened. It was a great shocker, I should say. But yeah, so that's the only one time that he ever did anything drastic with the arrangement, except, of course, the greatest songs of the 70s where he did an unplugged version and he reharmonized it just a little bit. But we'll talk about that when we do that episode.
Obviously. So here we go. We're moving on to another track that I feel is kind of a fan favorite that wasn't really a chart hit, but I get the feeling a lot of fans love this track. I Was a Fool to Let You Go. This is another Marty Panzer lyric that Manilow put music to. I've known this song for a very long time. I think after my most recent listens and being a little more familiar with more of the discography as the years have gone on, this song, I think, could have had an arrangement of it fit on the Paradise Cafe record. This has that jazz sort of that he called Paradise Cafe that smoky jazz sound. I think this kind of has that smoky jazz sound. Aside from like the big band moment in the middle with all the horns, I think this song could have been on the Paradise Cafe record had he come up with it a few years later. And this is where I would like to put this out into the universe. I would love to hear more songs like this if there are any in the vault or any that he's worked on. Paradise Cafe meets the big band sound is such an interesting combination to me. And I think that would be crazy if there were more tracks like this. I think people would really eat that up. What are your thoughts on this track?
Yeah, wouldn't that be amazing? And it's so great that you have highlighted the connection this song has to the Paradise Cafe album that came later. It's not an accident that this song, I think, is a through line to that particular record. Actually, one thing it has in common is that Bill Mays plays the piano on this track. He's also on the Paradise Cafe record. So there is that association. But one thing that I know about this song, an interesting fact, is that Frank Sinatra Sr., that is the old Blue Eyes, he once considered recording this song, and he went so far as to actually commissioning an arrangement. And now, for whatever reason, Frank Sinatra Sr. never recorded it. However, many years later, Frank Sinatra Jr. got the chart that had been arranged for his father, and he sang it, and he put it on one of his albums. So there is something a little bit Sinatra-esque about this song, and I think that's a little more pronounced when you see what it was performed on the second Barry Manilow special. I think the Sinatra-esque part of this is more apparent there. And so it's kind of not, I guess it's not an accident that this song was written and this was at one point seriously considered by the chairman of the board himself as a song that he might want to sing. And so I think Barry Manilow did such a fabulous job at not just doing a throwback song. And by the way, he's always on his albums up to this point, all the pop albums that came before this, there was always a throwback song. This song was the throwback song for the album. And it's, you know, and it, but it's, he did more than just throwback. He created a brand new classic. This lyric by Marty Panzer is absolutely sublime. And I think when we look at songs that are great, I think this one definitely deserves a mention.
I do as well. And you have actually heard this song live before.
I have, yes. So when Manilow closed out his One Last Time tour, which was meant to be his very last log-scale world tour, it wrapped up in 2016. It wrapped up in Denver, Colorado. But for that special occasion, he followed his final performance with a special midnight show called Midnight with Manilow. And for those of you who've never heard of that particular show, it's actually an episode on Manilow TV. You could watch it. I was there.
Another reason to get it. Another reason to get Manilow TV. You were there. That is crazy to me.
Yeah, and so it was a real big surprise to hear him play that one live, and it was just amazing. I loved hearing this. It was such a treat to actually say that I heard this at least one time.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, that could be the last performance he's done of this song.
To my knowledge, I believe so. Most recent.
Yeah. So that's crazy that you got to see that live, potentially the last time that it'll ever be played, unless he decides to throw it into the show at some point.
I hope he does. I think he should.
I hope he does, too. I absolutely love that song. It was one of the first songs that I actually learned from him on the piano.
Really?
Yeah. You learn something every day about each other. There you go. So track 9, Losing Touch, is another song, music by Barry Manilow, lyrics by Bruce Sussman and Jack Feldman, the same writing team from Copacabana. This song is very interesting. It's a very different vibe from everything else we've heard so far on the record, I feel. I want to just say this song feels very musical theater. I talked about that a little bit with Can't Smile Without You with all the key changes, but this song feels like it could be in a musical to me. When I would listen to it, and I just kept thinking, this sounds like it could be sung by an actor on stage in relation to whatever story it is in. That's what I felt listening to this song. And I wanted to ask, at the beginning of the song, towards the beginning of the song, he mentions scotch, the drink. Is that the only time that scotch is mentioned in his entire discography? I can't think of another time.
To my knowledge, yes, that I cannot think of another time he referenced scotch in any songs, no.
Yeah, so I think that's something that caught me off at the beginning. It's weird. He doesn't usually reference beverages, but that caught me off guard at the beginning. I wanted to bring attention to a lyric in this song that I loved, and it involves the title of the track, Losing Touch. There's so much to lose, and I think we're losing touch. That is such a beautiful lyric, and I should mention that this song was arranged. I've failed to mention the orchestrations before, but this track was arranged by Jimmy Haskell. Is that how you pronounce that, Barry?
Yes.
I don't want any angry fanalos coming into our inbox telling me how to pronounce these names. But just going back real quick to make sure we get these, I Was a Fool was arranged by Artie Butler, and then Even Now was arranged by Artie Butler, and Where Do I Go From Here was arranged by Jimmy Haskell as well. So anyway, back to Losing Touch. That's what I love about this song, is the feel of musical theater and the overarching theme of there's so much to lose, and I think we're losing touch. What stuck out to you about this song, Barry?
Well, the musical theater vibe that you're feeling, I think, was not accidental, because Bruce Sussman comes from the world of Broadway, and he said very often that in his interviews that he had no intention of going into the pop music world until Mandy happened. And so here he is on the Even Now album writing a pop song with Jack Feldman and Barry Manilow. And I think from his perspective, they had to invent a story to tell. And so that would be an interesting question to try to learn the answer to. What was the backstory of the story they're trying to tell in this song. And it's a great lyric, and the orchestrations are absolutely amazing. And let me just mention about Jimmy Haskell. He is a world-famous orchestrator. He's done songs from The Tide Is High by Blondie to The Bridge Over Troubled Water by Simon and Garfunkel. And how about a orchestral arrangement that, when you think of big orchestral arrangements, Bridge Over Troubled Water comes right to the top of my mind. So the fact that Barry Manilow wanted to do something similar on his album, it makes sense to just call up the person that you know who knows how to do it.
Exactly. So yeah, that was my big takeaway from this song, was this does feel, because like you said, Bruce Sussman and Jack Feldman both come from the world of theater, and we know that Barry Manilow growing up loved musical theater as well. So I think this is what they were going for with this song, is a very musical theater type track. So if it's all right with you, we'll move on here. We're making a little better time than we did at the beginning. Here we go. Track number 10. This was also orchestrated by Jimmy Haskell, and it was written by Michael Price and Dan Walsh. This is the longest title on the album. This is I Just Want to Be the One in Your Life. This one is very bizarre to me, at least at the beginning, because the first note he hits in the song is this G, this high G. I would consider that a tenor note. That is a tenor note right out of the gate, and that does not happen a lot in Barry Manilow's discography. Talk a bit about your thoughts on the production and arrangement of this song.
Well, I think the centerpiece of this particular song is the vocal arrangement, the background vocals. So I want to tip my hat to Ron Dante. He has such a fabulous voice. And when he blends his voice with Barry Manilow, the combination is absolutely amazing. I believe they double each other. They build all their parts out, and I think they double each other, and that's how they get this big wall of sound. It seems like it's the vocal harmonies that they've done on the records, Ron and Barry, have been very influenced by the Beach Boys and the Beatles, the later day Beatles, and I think it's just in this particular track, I think it stands out the most to me. This is my favorite vocal arrangement, I think, on the entire album, is on this song. And you're right, this is an incredibly high song. It's at a very high register. But, of course, I think that there was already a decided method that the studio versions might generally be higher, with the intention that these will never be sung live, and if they are going to be sung live, they're going to be done with a completely different arrangement. So this particular one, I would struggle to think how in the world this could ever make it into a show, because it has such a big vocal range and has such high notes. You'd really have to do a lot of work to rework this into something that you could do live. So this is an example of something that's really beautiful on the studio record, and I'm not sure how you could actually recreate this in a live performance.
Yeah, I've never heard of him doing this one live, and it just sounds like, if you even exclude like the back vocal section, just for him to sing it, I feel like would be insanely challenging. So I would be very shocked if this ever found its way into the live set at any point over the past 50 years. One thing I want to mention, we'll mention this at some point in the future, but I was raised on the Music and Passion live DVD, Live from Las Vegas in 2005, and the theme of that show was a song called Here's to Las Vegas, and I wanted to mention there is a lyrical connection from I Just Want to Be the One in Your Life to Here's to Las Vegas, the phrase forever for always. He mentions that in this song. This is actually in the chorus of this song, I Just Want to Be the One in Your Life. And Here's to Las Vegas, at the end, he says, forever, for always, for everyone, here's to Las Vegas. So, seeing as that's a song where Manilow penned the lyric himself, I can't help but think he took that little blurb from this song for that. So that was my first big whoa moment, because I was raised on Music and Passion, and that just set off all the alarm bells when I heard that phrase. So that was a very interesting connection that I found with this song. Now, we're moving on here. We're down to the last few. Stick with us. Here we go. This is track 11. It's called Starting Again. This one was also orchestrated by Jimmy Haskell, and it was written by Barry Manilow and Marty Panzer. Marty Panzer's all over this record. I said in my notes, this is another musical theater vibe song, which is interesting because we just had a musical theater vibe from the team of Manilow, Sussman, and Feldman, and now we're having a musical theater vibe from Manilow and Panzer. So I thought that was interesting that he achieved kind of the same overarching, I don't want to say overarching sound, but overarching sound of inspiration with a completely different writing team. And I love the lyric delivery in this song. It's very intense, I'd say, is a good word to describe it. And my highlight for this track was the orchestration. And I mean, obviously, with the person, with Jimmy orchestrating it, I think it's obvious that you're going to enjoy the orchestration. So, Barry, what is it that sticks out to you about this particular track?
Well, I think you hit it on the head very well, Logan, and talking about, yes, this does also feel like a musical theater track. This really feels like a monologue that you could put into the middle of a musical, and it would make sense. It's a song that advances the story. And when you listen to this, I think it's the orchestration that really helps underscore the drama of the moment. Like I said, that is one of the hallmarks of Manilow's sound, and this really is such a great example of that. And this, and like I was saying, when you listen to the vocal performance that's delivered, you know, you can hear that Brooklyn accent. So I think that, in a way, you know, I think that when you hear that accent, not only does it have a charm to it, but it has an authenticity. Because I know Manilow has wondered aloud many times, why did people like this? Why do people keep coming to my concerts? And I would say probably the reason why, especially looking back at the time period of the 1970s, is that his delivery was completely authentic. And that's what's connecting to people, I think. And so a song like this is just a great, again, a great example of how he can make that connection through the vocal performance. He's not trying to be somebody he's not. He is just being himself, at least to the way he can present that to people. And I think he did a great job on the vocal performance, and the orchestration really matches it very well.
Yeah, I think this is one of the standout tracks that I wasn't very familiar with before really researching this album for this episode. I thought it was beautifully done. And now, here we are, the final track of the original release of the Even Now record. And let me just say, with this song, this was not the vibe I thought was going to be going on with this final track. This was a song called Sunrise. It was written by Barry Manilow and Adrian Anderson. Adrian Anderson penned hits from previously in the Manilow catalog on the regular track list of Even Now. This is the only Adrian Anderson lyric, which is interesting coming out of the This One's For You record. Adrian Anderson was all over that. So this is an interesting track to close with. This sort, I would say it's kind of maybe bossa nova type sound that I was not expecting that. At all, this I was not expecting this type of vibe for the final song. And I noticed how the verses are very minor and they sound very dark, but then the chorus hits and the atmosphere shifts, and it's almost like, with the lyrical content, the song being called Sunrise, I listen to this song as the verses represent the nighttime and the chorus represents the sunrise. That was what I felt in the vibe switch between the verse and the other section. If that makes sense. I don't know if that made any sense, but that's what I was feeling. So give me your thoughts. This is the final track on the regular album. How do you feel this song worked as the original album closer?
You know, I think your observation makes total sense. I think that there was a contrast where the verse is set in a minor feel, and then you're depart from that when you get to the chorus, the sunrise. And I think what is notable about this song, yes, the feeling is so much different from all the other songs, because there's no bossa nova samba feel on any of the other songs. But what sticks out to me is I feel that this song is very personal. It probably might be one of the most personal songs on the album, because having read the memoir Sweet Life, It's a Long Way Up, or excuse me,
that's your live on Broadway influence coming out.
Yes,
right there.
That's right. I meant to say, yes. So Sweet Life, Adventures on the Way to Paradise, the memoir, he wrote and talked about this period of his life, and it was very, very tumultuous, and we'll probably go into more depth about that when we eventually will do an episode on that memoir. So given all that, this is a person, you listen to the person who's singing this, the character in the story, they really feel kind of shipwrecked. And I think it ends on the minor. It goes back into the verse form, and then there's this beautiful piano solo. This is one of my favorite piano solo moments in the whole Matalo discography. And the more I think about it, and the more I listen to this song, in particular when we were preparing for this program, it really felt like a sense of melancholy listening to that end and that fade out. It doesn't feel like a happy ending. It feels like a profoundly, profoundly deep moment, and it seems very uncertain as to what's going to happen next. I feel that this song very symbolically expresses what he was feeling inside. So, I mean, I don't know. I can't say for sure, but I'm certainly only reporting on what I feel as a listener, my own opinion, my own interpretation of what this song might mean. So it's very deep. It's really profound. And as a closer, it's really remarkable. And the last thing I'll just say about this track, but with respect to the album as a whole, Even Now is a very dark album. The happiest song on it, I think, is Somewhere in the Night. But when you take these songs, each and every one of them, including Copacabana, is about heartbreak and loss. And now this particular song, Sunrise, is the one that song that's not about losing love, but it certainly, like I said, it has that shipwrecked feeling. But this was such a really, of all the songs that were recorded during the sessions, I think this was the perfect one to close out the album on. And like I said, that fade out moment, just absolutely profound.
I agree. I think that's what made it such a intriguing closer to the original release of the album, because it does leave you wondering, forgive the pun, where do we go from here?
Right.
You know, it's we don't know what's going to happen. Obviously, over 40 years later, we know where they went from there, but it's interesting, like you were talking about how your dad went and got that album the day it released. I'd be interested to know, maybe we can follow up with him, what was his thoughts when the album finished for the first time? What was the feeling of having heard all of this for the first time on the day it released, and that being it? I think that'd be very interesting.
You know, I did ask him about that, and he told me that he had a very a big reaction to this. His mind was blown, that he had no idea that a single album or person could make such an artistic statement. I think he would say that Even Now is his favorite album of all of them. So he did have that effect of having listened to it when it first came out, and at the end just really feeling, like I said, that it was a very profound experience to listen to it. And as I said, this whole album is such an amazing artistic achievement. And I think even made all the more remarkable when you think about how Manilow had to do what was his biggest challenge. And that was not deal with failure, but how to deal with success. And he has said, and I know several occasions where he's said, that he's most proud of having survived success. When there's suddenly elevated expectations for you to do what you do it better, and do it, you know, while touring the world and going back and forth from everywhere. But nevertheless, he's in this moment. He comes out and creates one of his greatest artistic statements. And that, to me, is what makes this album just even more remarkable than it already is when you consider where he is in his lifetime at this moment. And he goes and creates a masterpiece.
Yeah. I totally agree with that. I'm very excited now that we've talked about this and we've gotten our thoughts out to go back and listen to it more and see what else I can take from it. So now let's quickly discuss the couple of bonus tracks that have surfaced over the years. We don't need to spend too much time on this because we are very well into this episode already. The two bonus tracks, I'm Coming Home Again. It was written by Bruce Roberts and Carol Bayer Sager, which is a name that we will see pop up in the future. And then No Love for Jenny, which is another lyric penned by Adrian Anderson. You know, I just want to say one thing, and then we'll talk about kind of both of them together. Sunrise is the only Adrian Anderson lyric that appeared on the real album track list, the 12 tracks on the album. One of the bonus tracks released is a lyric from her. How many others did they try, but they didn't make the cut? That's what I would be interested in, is there's only one that we, like I said, we just came out of the This One's For You album. She was all over that. Now she only has one on the album and one bonus track. It, for me, again, speculation, where's the tinfoil hat? I'll put it on. It would seem weird to me that we come out of This One's For You, where she wrote so many fantastic songs, and they're kind of on a winning streak together. Why is her name not all over this album? So that would be something I'd be interested in. Let's start there. Let's start there, yeah. And then we'll try to wrap it up.
Well, what I'll say is I think that in any album situation, especially for artists like Barry Manilow, that they, when they start, sometimes there's an end destination in mind. Maybe there's not a destination in mind, or sometimes there is a destination in mind that changes along the way. And I think what the track listing of Even Now reflects a certain type of songs. And like we've covered, you know, Heartbreak, that's what Marty Panzer does very well. You know, Broadway or show tunes, that's what Bruce Sussman does very well. And I think that perhaps, you know, Adrian Anderson's lyrics, Could It Be Magic, Daybreak, they have a very optimistic feel, and perhaps that's not what ended up being part of the right tapestry for the Even Now album. So I think you do see Manilow rotate the collaborators that you see on the albums, and sometimes you might have a particular album where one dominates more than others. Like, for example, Enoch Anderson, who's only on one song, he completely dominates the 15 Minutes record, for example. So I think Manilow knows whose wheelhouse is best suited for any assignment, and he'll go to the ones or use the songs that fit what he's trying to do, whereas the others, they might maybe they'll try to write something, maybe they'll get one cut, or maybe it won't make the cut. Or in fact, If I Should Love Again, we know that Marty Panzer did some writing for that album, and we didn't hear it on the final release. We only heard it when bonus tracks of remasters came out. We heard songs that he actually wrote for that album cycle. But that's just, as I said, that's an artistic decision that I know that Manilow makes. And obviously, like we said, this Even Now is such a great artistic statement. And that's why these two songs in particular, I think they're, I like I'm Coming Home Again. It's a great song. And the reason I don't think it made the album, because it's too happy. It's too optimistic. And that didn't fit with the mood of the album. And when it comes to No Love for Jenny, this song is not a love song. And it's more of a, you know, it's a story song. It's a, actually the exact word that Manilow used to describe this lyric for No Love for Jenny was that it's a very ambitious lyric. And so I can understand why, you know, great song, great recording, but it just does not have a place on this particular album. And unfortunately, Manilow is such a prolific artist that he's already writing the next album, and there's no time to go back into the vaults and try to clear out the vaults. It's time to, you know, move on to something new. And so, as the effect of that is that you have all these great songs, these really gorgeous songs that are still left over. I'm Coming Home Again, though. What's interesting about the version we hear is that it's not orchestrated.
Yes.
He actually said it was supposed to be orchestrated, and they decided it was not going to make the record, so they did not orchestrate it. That makes me kind of curious. What would an orchestration have sounded like? Would it have been, maybe it would have been a Jimmy Haskell orchestration? That would make sense to me. So we'll never know, but maybe we can speculate and guess.
Exactly. I mean, we should get some tinfoil hats to wear on this show.
I think we should.
That would be. Can we get some with the Manilow M on them? I think that'd be kind of fun. So we have officially made it through all of the tracks that have come through the original release and the remasters with the bonus tracks and everything. So now let's talk a bit about our favorite tracks. Each episode, we're going to try to pick two or three of our personal favorites from the album. Barry, I'll let you go first. What were the standouts of this album for you?
Okay, number one, Somewhere in the Night. Like I said, just the quintessential example of Barry Manilow's pop greatness. It has every element you could possibly think of. And so it's been a personal favorite for as long as I've listened to Manilow music. Of course, number two, no surprise, Leave It in the Morning is a very great song, and I really enjoy listening to it. And then third, Sunrise. Just, it's such a profound artistic statement. I really, really, well, it's hard to pick favorites because also Even Now is also a great favorite, but again, this is just what I'm feeling here in this moment.
I totally see where you're coming from on that. This album, I really don't think there is a song that you could consider bad
not
on
at
this
all.
Album.
Not at
like,
all.
Like there are no full misses on this album at all. So I want to mention right off the bat, I would say potentially my favorite track from the album, and we'll see if I catch flack for this or not, I Was a Fool.
Hmm.
That one has been with me since I was a kid, because it is on, like we mentioned before, the second TV special from the late 70s. So that's how I was introduced to it. And I always kind of knew it in the back of my head. And then I was teaching myself how to play the piano, and I thought of that song. And I just remember really wanting to learn it. And I did, and it's always one of my favorites. In fact, there used to be a piano in my high school band room that before and after class I would sit down and play. And then around the time that I learned it, that would be like the only song I would play. So like I would sit down at the piano and it'd be silence with the other percussion people behind me, and I would just go, and they would just be like, oh, this again.
Ha!
Like I played it so many times, like they got to know it, which I thought that was kind of interesting, but they never knew it was a Barry Manilow song. I didn't want to spoil that part. Another one of my favorites from this album is a Linda song. Again, I talked before, it has all of the qualities of a fantastic Barry Manilow song from this era, and I don't feel like it gets the love it deserves. It only got played once, which I think is a shame, and it wasn't even on the album tour. Disclaimer, as far as we know, to find our email address if you know different. And then I have to give my third favorite to Copacabana. I have to. It's the Barry Manilow song that I have played the most in my own show. It's the one that, you know, the shows here where I do a Barry Manilow show. Give a quick plug there for that stuff. It's one of my favorites just because everybody knows it. And it's so fun to sing. And it's just, I think there was a big reason that was probably what you could consider maybe his opus. Is that is the song that's associated with him. And I think it's good reason. So those are my three favorites. Now, Barry, this is our first album discussion. People don't know what we're really talking about yet here as far as the format goes. So explain our next section.
Yeah, so this next section is really, really fun. So Logan and I have decided we are going to select an MVP of the album. Now, this MVP can be anybody associated with the album. The only rule is that the MVP of the album can't be Barry Manilow.
Yeah, he would be the MVP of every album if we were allowed to pick him. So this can be a songwriter, it can be a musician, it can be a producer, it can be anybody involved in the album except for Barry Manilow himself. So I have chosen mine. Barry, have you chosen yours?
Yes, I have. So Logan and I have wrote this down on a piece of paper. So on the count of three, we are going to show them to the camera, and Logan and I are going to see who we picked as the MVP. Okay, on three. Ready? One, two, three.
Whoa! There it is.
We both got the same one?
We both picked Marty Panzer.
Yes.
Okay, so let's see. I think my reasoning, I thought about giving it to Jimmy Haskell. I thought about it. But when you consider that Panzer wrote the lyrics for Even Now, he wrote the lyric for I Was a Fool and Leaving in the Morning, all three of those songs showed up in our favorite tracks. I was going to give it to Jimmy at first, but I started thinking, what are the songs that have lasted for me on this album? And I absolutely had to give it to Marty Panzer. What is your reasoning?
Yeah, I think what it comes down to is that if you take everything away musically, orchestrations, and you're left with the words, they are so beautiful. Let's use, because a lot has been said about Even Now, so maybe I'll just say about I Was a Fool to Let You Go. That lyric paints a picture. And so I don't think this album would have been as great if it was not for the great raw material that Manilow drew from and then created this masterpiece. So if these lyrics weren't there, I don't think this album would have been as strong. So I think he has to be MVP for this album.
I absolutely agree. That's interesting. It's our first episode ever, and we both agreed on the same person. So now I'm looking forward to our future episodes to see if we end up picking the same person again. So I think that's going to do it here for Even Now. This has been insanely long. We apologize, but there was really no way we could have shortened it. We had to say everything that we did. So obviously this is our first episode. I'm guessing all of you are new viewers, so please find us on social media. We have social media now. Facebook, Instagram, at The Manilow Method. We have an email address down in the description, as well as social media links. Reach out to us at email, themanilowmethod@gmail.com. Send us your stories, your ideas. If you've met Manilow, if you've seen him in concert, what songs did you hear live? Anything that's related to the impact that Barry Manilow has had on you. Any theories you have about, did we get something wrong? Did we get something right? Can you answer one of the questions we pose to our audience throughout the episode? Please reach out to us. We'd love to hear from you. And we might even feature you in a future episode if you have some cool ideas. So, Barry, tell everybody how we are going to be doing this show.
Yes. So, we've released our first episodes of where we actually talk about an album on Manilow Mondays, which are the first and third Monday of the month when we are in season. And then following the release of our episode, the first Friday, so this Friday coming up this week, Logan is going to be releasing a cover of one of the songs from the album episode we just covered. So this coming Friday, Logan will be covering a song from the Even Now album. Then Monday of next week, I will be releasing a cover of a song from the Even Now album or whichever album we covered in the episode that just aired the week before. And then next Friday of next week, Logan and I are going to release a cover together that we're going to sing together coming from the Even Now album. You do not want to miss this. So make sure you are subscribed to us on YouTube. Click the bell for the notifications and you'll find out which songs we decided to cover.
Exactly. Every single album we do, we're never going to publish what songs we are covering. So you'll just have to subscribe. Like you said, turn on the notification bell, follow us on our social medias so you can stay up to date with everything with this show. We hope you enjoyed our first ever album discussion diving into the Even Now album, and we cannot wait to dive into more of Manilow's discography in the coming weeks throughout the rest of season one. We hope you join us on our next album discussion in a couple weeks, where we're all going to go dancing in the dark with the Manilow Method. We'll see you next time. Hey, everybody. We hope you enjoyed today's episode of The Manilow Method with me, Logan Allen, and my co-host, Mr. Barry Harris. Before we go, I just want to make a brief plug for the Manilow Music Project. For those of you who don't know what that is Dr. Manilow's nonprofit organization that donates funds, equipment, instruments to schools, music programs that can't necessarily afford them. They're a great project with a great mission, and we highly recommend you check them out. You can find them at Manilow Music Project on social medias and at manilowmusicproject.org online. You can donate there and learn all sorts of other information. One more thing, our brief theme music that you hear at the beginning of every episode is based on Frédéric Chopin's Prelude in C minor. It was performed by my co-host, Barry Harris, and for those of you who are really in the know about Barry Manilow music, that is what Could It Be Magic is based off of, that Prelude in C minor. So one last thing, thank you to Barry Manilow and his band and his crew and everyone else that has helped in his success along the way, because without all of them, we would not be here celebrating this fantastic music with you. So be sure to tune in later this week on Friday when I drop a cover song from the album that we just discussed, and then Barry is going to drop one next Monday, and then we're going to drop a collaboration on one of those songs next Friday. So we've got content rolling out for you all week long. We hope you subscribe, hit the notification bell. Anytime we post a new video, you will be alerted. Thank you so much, everybody. We will see you soon on the Manilow Method.